Now, the alliance between France and Sweden was at first, we have to say, I think, rather less than successful. The French did attempt to invade the Spanish Netherlands, what is now Belgium, in 1635, but the invasion effort was a complete failure. And the following year, 1636, actually saw the Habsburgs mounting a counter-invasion. A two-pronged invasion of France was mounted. One imperial field army came in from the east, invaded Burgundy, threatening the city of Dijon. And the Spanish army of Flanders came down from the north into northern France, and cavalry units actually got as close as the Parisian suburbs themselves in the summer of 1636. And for a long time, this was a humiliation for the French. They called it the Year of Corbie, Corbie being the town which was ultimately captured just outside of Paris by the Habsburgs. The Swedes did reasonably well in 1636. They did win a victory over their Saxon adversaries, but the imperial forces counterattacked and ultimately drove the Swedes almost into the sea, into the Baltic Sea in the north, that is to say. By the end of 1637, in other words, the Swedes are also in trouble, clinging to the Baltic coastline by their fingernails. France and Sweden, reviewing this fairly disappointing performance, therefore had to realize that they would have to put aside whatever strategic differences they had had in the early years of the alliance and just work together a lot more carefully. And through a series of treaties between 1636 and 1641, the two powers were bound together to fight together for the entire duration of the war, in exchange for which the French promised to provide even more funds to the cash-starved Swedes. And this rather more cohesive military partnership would soon produce fairly dramatic results. It must be said that by the late 1630s, war weariness was really widespread throughout Europe. The problem, however, was that nobody wanted to give up what they had achieved so far, having poured so many resources and suffered so much into the war, suffered so much in the war thus far. Nobody really wanted to give up anything. Just to give you a sense of that, the Habsburg Emperor, Ferdinand III, who had succeeded his father, Ferdinand II, in 1637, wanted to retain all the gains made by the imperialists at the Peace of Prague in 1635. What that meant, in other words, was using the year 1627 as the so-called normative date for the toleration of religious minorities and the retention of secularized church lands. By contrast, many of the electors, these important German princes, preferred the date 1618, and indeed as late as the year 1633, Protestant negotiators would propose the date 1612 as a normative date. What this would have meant, in other words, was that the Catholics would have had to surrender everything that they had acquired over the course of the war, and that was a position which was simply unacceptable to them. The French and the Swedes, for their part, wanted to return to the status quo in 1618, but both France and Sweden also agreed that they would seek territorial and fiscal concessions. So these two positions, the Habsburg position, the Emperor's position, wanting to hold on to the gains secured by the Peace of Prague in 1635, and the French and the Swedes wanting to roll the clock back, in a sense, to 1618, were obviously incompatible. But in the 5 years between roughly 1638 and 1643, the growing military pressure of the Franco-Swedish alliance would ultimately force the Habsburgs to start making concessions. And the defeat of the Habsburgs, it seems to me, is best analyzed in two parts. First of all, the war in Germany, and second of all, the collapse of Spain. Let's start with Germany, where the fighting was concentrated in the late 1630s on the Upper Rhine, on the border between what is now France and Germany. After a very long and really savage campaign on the Upper Rhine in the spring and summer of the year 1638, the French paid army, led by Bernard of Weimar, that army just bought by Richelieu, finally succeeded in occupying not only most of Alsace, but also in capturing the key fortress of Breisach in December of 1638. Breisach was crucial because it guarded the last possible overland route between northern Italy and the Spanish Netherlands. And once this French paid army took Breisach, it was impossible for Spain to send any overland reinforcements to its army in Flanders. Meanwhile, in northern Germany, the Swedish army, now fortified with French subsidies, went back on the offensive in 1639. It moved into Saxony and defeated the Saxons at the Battle of Chemnitz in April of 1639 and proceeded as far south as Bohemia, threatening the key city of Prague. In 1640, things only got worse for the Habsburgs because in that year, and actually this would be repeated in 1641 as well, Sweden and France, for the first time, succeeded in mounting a kind of combined operation. Rather than operating in distinct theaters, the Swedish and French forces managed to link up in central Germany and then go rampaging throughout the entire empire. The Franco-Swedish army seems to have numbered as much as 40,000 men, and it ravaged the length and breadth of the Holy Roman Empire, from Brunswick in the north to Bavaria in the south, and from the Rhineland in the west to Bohemia in the east.